The gentle healer came into our town today. He touched blind eyes and the darkness left to stay. But more than the blindness, he took their sins away. The gentle healer came into our town today. And the gentle healer of which Michael Card sings is the Jesus that I want to know. The 9th chapter of John is kind of a showdown for Jesus. He heals a blind man and then immediately gets into a gigantic conflict with the community and leaders of the synagogue for what he has done because he heals on the Sabbath. And so it's a turning point in the ministry of Jesus, and you begin to hear the sounds of crucifixion and the direction to Jerusalem and the coming end of Christ's life as we know of Good Friday. It's a whole chapter of drama, and I wish we had time to just live with the whole drama. But I hope you read it when you go home. And let's listen in on it for a few moments today to see what we can learn about seeing, physically seeing, and spiritually seeing. I want to say just a couple of simple things. A blind man sees. One who's never seen the light of day, the color of trees, the face of a friend, is treated by Jesus with mud pies, which when washed off in the pool of Siloam, empowers the eyesight he never dreamed possible. Now, even the most casual reader has to come away from this story saying, what's happening here? What's going on? Inquiring minds want to know. And I've read this passage of Scripture and this miracle event of Jesus through different eyes in the last few weeks and months of my life. And I want to share with you what I see there today. When you're ill, you use whatever you've got. The Pool of Siloam was an open-air basin 20 by 30 feet, fed by conduit into the city leading from a spring out in the Kidron Valley. It was built not for healing purposes, but for defense purposes, so they would always have a water supply inside the wall. And to think that a combination of dirt and saliva could set in motion a healing process that culminated in a baptismal bath at the Pool of Siloam is, well, it's odd to us, is it not? Even knowing that other cultures in the day use saliva as a healing method still seems almost abrasive to us in our day and times. The Africans used it, the Egyptians used it. It was a rather common practice in Jesus' day, and yet we read it with strange thoughts now in the 21st century. And then it hit me. You know, us beggars can't be choosers. When you're sick, you use whatever you can find to get well. After having several negative reactions to all kinds of chemotherapy, I said to my oncologist the other day, I said to him, you know, people 50 years from now are going to look at the treatment of cancer in 2005 as one of the most barbaric things that anybody could do to another human being. And he looked at me with a twinkle in his eye and he says, Howard, you know, you're absolutely right, but it's the best we've got. And so everybody at every stage of life uses the best that they've got to try to be as well as they can. So I understand people, why people travel to Lourdes to drink the spring water hoping to be healed, or why people go to Benny Hinn Crusade seeking a special touch, or why people take alternative medicines praying that the vitamins might be an answer. Beggars can't be choosers, so you just Use whatever you've got. And that is exactly what Jesus is doing in this story. As barbaric as it may seem to us in the 21st century. When you're ill, you take what you can get. And you're glad for it. And Jesus reached out and touched him and set in motion a healing process in his life. Now, there are all kinds of movements in our day, most of them of the New Age variety, promoting the power of touch. One group encouraging parents to touch their children says touch is the most important of all the senses. It stimulates all the other senses. It stimulates, in addition to that, language and communication. It promotes bonding and attachment. Hug children are happy children, and for a price they'll come and teach you how to hug your children. Another website says touch unlocks compassion and heartfelt care between the provider and the client, which makes them equal partners in facilitating health and healing. And after I'd been through about 15 or 20 of these websites, as I say, almost all of them in the New Age variety, I walked away from it with a question on my mind. Has fear and abuse caused the church to abandon one of its most effective tools of healing? The touch of a human hand? Can we create a community where children can be hugged without being hurt, where youth and adults can be touched without being hit on, and the elderly can once more feel the comfort of human hands without embarrassment? Would we discover that healing power again? Even on Sunday morning? When you're sick, you'll take whatever you can get. When you're ill, you rejoice in good results. And I think there's a kind of irony in this story at this point. This blind guy who didn't ask for anything, just pointed out by the disciples, you know, hadn't practiced any great faith, hadn't chased Jesus down the road begging him to have mercy on him or anything, winds up healed. He can see. And it just drives the Pharisees nuts because the healing has happened on the Sabbath. And so they bring him into a church trial. Now, the ultimate in the first century or the 21st century is a church trial. Stay out of them any way you possibly can. And they bring him in and they try him. And they ask him, who was this guy? And he says, I don't know who he was. Well, what right did he have to be healing you? And he says, I don't know what right he had. Well, how dare he do something like this on the Sabbath day? And he said, I don't really know about Sabbath days. I just know one thing. I once was blind, but now I see. Y'all figure out the rest of it. If it's important to you, you figure it out. I don't know. I don't know if his methods were approved by the FDA or not, but I really don't care. You know? It's not a big deal to me. You get it to fit in your religious system and have it appropriate in your law, but I just know one thing. I was blind, but now I can see. And I want to tell you, when you've been ill, you'll go for that every day and let the chips fall wherever they may. A blind man sees. But then we're introduced to something else in this story. That's why you need to read all 41 verses of it. We're introduced into a new kind of blindness. One man has been physically blind from birth, gets his sight back. And suddenly we realize that a whole community of people, disciples, neighbors, church people, synagogue people, wind up seeing that they're really blind. And so suddenly we're into this conversation about spiritual blindness and their reactions to Jesus Christ, who came to be the light of the world. Someone asked Helen Keller once, who was blind from the age of 19 months, about the power of blindness. And she says, the worst thing that can befall a person is not to lose your sight, but to lose your vision. And the problem with the people sitting around Jesus that day was that they lost their vision. Oh, yes, they could physically see the trees, but they couldn't understand the waves of the Spirit in their midst. And there are things that always are blinding us. You know, sometimes backgrounds can be a barrier. Backgrounds can blind us. That was true of the disciples in the story. They pick him out. They just see him. How, why they got him, I don't know, out of all the rest. But they point him out of the crowd and say to Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now, it's always a little odd to me that he had time to sin before he was born some way. You got to figure that one out. And yet, it was the thought of his day, of Jesus' day, that indeed, the sins of the fathers are born on the children to the third and fourth generation. And they read it right out of Exodus chapter 20, verse 5, right in the middle of the Ten Commandments. You have that foreboding statement about the sins of the fathers born out on the children to the third and fourth generation. They've been living by that. Some people still live by it, seems to me. But Jesus had a better ideal. Jesus says it rains on the just and the unjust. And Jesus says good things happen to bad people. And Jesus says bad things happen to good people. I'm sorry, because you need it all worked out, neat, fit into a cause and effect relationship so that life is neat and packaged for you in the right way, at the right time, at the right place. But I need to tell you, says Jesus, life is messy. And it's not always going to go together in a neat package. And they couldn't quite understand that. The disciples are blind in this story. Fear can blind us. These parents are scared to death. They're about to get kicked out of the synagogue. They've already lived a lifetime in the community shame that they must have done something to have caused their son to be blind. And now, in addition to that, the synagogue, the religious community, have decided they're going to kick him out. They're going to excommunicate him. Now, not many denominations excommunicate people anymore, but people in all denominations are constantly threatening to excommunicate themselves if things don't go their way in a particular place. And such power plays blind us to the healing power of God every time. Judgment can blind us. Judgmentalism. Isn't that what's going on with the Pharisees? How dare you be healing somebody on the Sabbath? That's not when you're supposed to be doing this. But the church is not a place to dissect miracles and turn the blessed into the accused, nor question the grace of God in people's lives. And yet that is exactly what the Pharisees do. They can't rejoice with somebody's rejoicing because he's broken. Jesus has broken a rule. And he has to be accountable in this moment. Some people call the Pharisees nitpickers. You know the source of that word, nitpicking? If you're a school teacher around here, you know. I live with one who's taught school 26 years, and I can just mention the word lice, and she starts scratching her head from time to time. She's so sensitive about that problem in public schools. You know how it is. Head lice take up residence next to your scalp. And each nit or tiny egg must be meticulously combed or picked or pulled from a single strand of hair. And some people become obsessed with nitpicking. With meticulous care, they find something wrong with everything. They pick at life's joys, tarnish life's triumphs, and make critical comments about every victory under the sun. You know how it goes. Wasn't that a beautiful wedding? Yeah, but the bride really should have lost a few pounds before her wedding day. Congratulations on your new promotion. I hope you get along with your new boss better than I did when I worked for him. Have you seen Jane's new baby? Too bad the little thing looks like his father so much. Isn't this sanctuary beautiful? It's a shame we don't have a preacher who can fill it up, you know, in the process of life. It was a wonderful healing. But Jesus, you messed it up. You did it on a Sabbath. That's nitpicking. And there are none so blind as those who will not see. We must not close our minds. We must let our hearts be free. A gentle healer came to church today. He is the truth, the life, the way. And he'd like to wash your pain away. The gentle healer has come to church today.